Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st day of September. Where did the year go? Anno Domini 2024, and you. Oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Mike Loden.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Before we get to the news, thank you, Michael, for coming in. Dave Enright, one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Southwest. And Michael has graciously stepped in to manage the board. And he's a professional. So when he screws up, it's a professional screw up. It's just so we know. All right. Yeah, looks could kill. Users of the open source email program Thunderbird, who still run it on old versions of Windows or Mac, will no longer get updates for the program from next month onward. The Thunderbird team announced that support will end as scheduled. This means this month's Thunderbird 115.15.0 release was the last major release for those platforms. This affects only Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and Mac OS 10.14 or earlier. Thunderbird 115.15 is the last major release for those operating systems. Thunderbird ESR 128 won't run on those systems anymore. Thunderbird 128, the latest version of the client, is only compatible with Windows 10 and 11, Mac OS 10.15 and higher, and of course, dang near any version of Linux. Mozilla faced the very same issue for its Firefox web browser, but it decided to extend support. Thunderbird uses Firefox code, which explains why the makers of both products had to find an answer for the same question. Mozilla decided to extend the support. Firefox users who still use one of the older operating systems mentioned earlier will receive support for another 6 months at the very least. The Thunderbird team offered three reasons for its decision to end support. Usage is lower. About 11% of Firefox users use Windows 7 or 8.1. For Thunderbird, that number is 6%, which is still a lot of people, but it's a low percentage. Thunderbird team has fewer resources available, and extending support for that few people would take resources away that are needed elsewhere. And, of course, Microsoft ended support for those operating systems, as did Apple. So that's why. Clearly, Thunderbird's project team is much smaller than the Firefox development team, and that is a valid argument. Thunderbird will continue to run after support ends, but the email client won't receive any updates anymore, so you can still use it. It just becomes less secure. This includes security updates, so you won't get those anymore. There's also the chance that issues and bugs may cause certain features of the client to stop working. This may not happen overnight, but since technology moves on, it seems likely that some features will stop working in the future. Thunderbird users who cannot switch systems at this time may be able to access email accounts on the web using whatever, you know, if you were getting Gmail through Thunderbird, you go to the Gmail web client. As far as email clients are concerned that support Windows 7 or 8, there are a few. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Thunderbird is no longer supporting older OSs. And your choices are, oh no, everybody panic, all in caps. I don't use an older OS. I don't use Thunderbird. Fine, I'll finally upgrade. I use the web version, and you still use email? So far, we've got, hold on, 35 votes, and I don't use an older OS has 13 of them, and I don't use Thunderbird has 11 of them. And the rest are, and nobody said finally upgrade. And, of course, you can vote on the poll at soundbites.org, and if you want to talk to us about that or dang near anything else on the planet, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. 800-795-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. There's a great deal of upset in the world when something that you've used for years is no longer available to you, and people get really nuts about it. Thunderbird is a well-loved email client. There are others. There's Proton Mail and Evolution. There's just a lot of them, but the one that many people use is Thunderbird. And it runs on dang near everything. It runs on Mac OS and Windows 10, 11. It runs on Linux. It runs on a Raspberry Pi. You can run it on a Chromebook in the Linux container. So there's just a lot. It just runs everywhere, and a lot of people use it. But the Thunderbird team is really a very small group of people. There are a lot of more flashier products that people like to be part of. Email seems kind of dull, kind of boring. It's not the new hotness. It's the old and busted. So Thunderbird has a small development team. And I don't mean like four, but certainly, you know, less than Firefox does or any of those. So they've decided they're just not going to support older systems anymore. There's few people using them, and there's no real reason to keep people on that, which takes, because remember, the resources are finite, right? If you've got people working on old versions of Thunderbird, they can't be working on the new versions of Thunderbird. If they're supporting old operating systems, they're not making new stuff for the current or future operating systems. So, you know, they're doing some triage, and they're saying goodbye to old versions of the operating system. Now, again, that does not mean that those operating systems will stop working. Okay, Thunderbird will continue to work on Windows 7. You will not get updates, which means that you will not get the latest security patches. You will not get the latest cool things. But if you're adamant about staying on Windows 7, or I can't imagine anybody being adamant about staying on Windows 8, but okay, if you're adamant about staying on those, or on 10.14 on or below on the Mac side, then yeah, you're using Thunderbird, you're going to find that you will be behind compared to everybody else. One of the things that that Google did years ago was insist that everybody must use OAuth, their two-factor authentication system. And Thunderbird scrambled to make that happen. And at that time, of course, they had everybody working on the same version, so they could say, you go make OAuth work. Or U2 or U4, however many it took. But now, you know, if they have to do one thing for the old group and a different thing for the new group, because remember, there's been a lot of changes to the operating systems themselves, and they don't necessarily work the same way underneath anymore. So the more you have to use the old stuff and the new stuff separately, the more scrambling you have to do to get everything done.
And the more exceptions you have in the code, the more likely it is there'll be some bug or some problem trying to support an older OS.
Right. So I fully understand them saying we don't support old versions of Windows or Mac anymore.
Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, which are so old.
Right.
So they're still supporting Windows 10. And then Mac OS 10.14, which is four versions old now. So it's what we often see is companies support the current version and two, maybe three versions old.
Right.
Okay, and any older than that, yeah, you've got old hardware. You know, maybe you can't get a new machine. And so I especially like that Thunderbird has that ESR version that will work on the newer the newer OS, the newer Thunderbird that works on the older OSs, so you don't have to abandon it completely.
Right. But that's going away, too. Thunderbird ESR won't work. They're not going to update ESR.
Right, so that's going to stay at 115.
Right.
Thunderbird's currently at 128, is it?
Yeah, something like that. I could start it up and find out, but
I'm on their blog that's explaining this.
There you go. So that's you know, people get angry. I fully understand this.
Rob is giving me tech support suggestions.
Thanks, Rob.
Unplug it and plug it back in. Why did I think of that?
I don't know. That's no. Yeah. So you have to turn in your support badge.
Well, no, see. I was too technical. I said, has the IP address changed?
Well, Steve is trying to get the studio cameras.
I got mics on.
Working. Mics is working.
Yes, mine is working.
Excellent.
Lucky Mike.
Mike and his mic. So we're good there.
Mic check.
Yep, he's there. So, yeah, it's Steve, every week, Steve does an amazing job getting all the cameras set up so that we can do YouTube and are we still doing
Facebook and Twitch?
Facebook and Twitch, okay. So, Steve gets all of that running, and he does that in about 14 seconds because he comes from his job. His store is open on Saturdays, and he does, you know, he's whatever tech support he's doing there, he's got to finish that before he comes here. Can't leave customers hanging, waiting for their computers. So he gets that done, and then he comes here. And sometimes he's early, and you've been early once or twice, haven't you? You were early today.
Yeah, it was what, 4 minutes to 12?
Yeah, that's early for you.
Yeah.
Yes, that's yes, quite early for Steve.
Really early for Steve.
I think so, I even beat you once.
You did. You have done that. You have, and I thought I missed the first hour. So, so yeah. But give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. I have to put Microsoft Office on my wife's laptop this weekend.
Ew.
Yeah. She had. She's a Windows kind of gal, and I gave her. We bought her a beautiful laptop years ago.
And
it finally died. So I gave her my best laptop because I want to sleep with both eyes closed at night.
Yep.
Because she had something she had to do quite immediately for market. And so I just said, here, take this one, put Windows on it, use it. Here you go. But now she wants, but we didn't have Microsoft Office for it. And
so don't get sucked into the $99 a year subscription. There is a single one-time license, home and student, for $150.
Got that.
Yeah.
And actually got it on discount through Woot.
Even better.
God, I love Woot. So I've got that. And so I have to put that on her machines this weekend. So that's going to be very exciting. I hate Windows. I do. I hate it. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Scott from Webster, New York. What's up, Scott?
Hey, fellas. I have a question. I have a PC that runs on Windows 10, and I also have a laptop, an older ThinkPad that I had when I was working that runs on Windows 10. So I'm thinking of upgrading to 11. I kind of like having the PC because I don't move around a lot, but I do like the flexibility of the laptop.
Sure.
So should I just go ahead and buy a nice laptop and make that my all-in-one machine, or I was thinking of getting a Chromebook and upgrade to another PC that has 11 on it?
Well, if you have, I'm assuming that neither of these machines will upgrade to 11?
They will not, no. No, I just as soon start out fresh, to be honest with you. They're older machines, and I just want to start out fresh with a clean slate. So.
Sure. Okay. So
they've been around for a while.
Right. Okay. So here's the various things. Laptops are great if you do a lot of wandering around.
Yeah.
You pay a premium for the ability to do that. You can get a lot more desktop for the same amount of money that you would pay for a lower-end laptop.
Okay.
So if you're mostly stationary,
right,
right, then I would suggest a desktop.
Okay, good.
And I would suggest Microsoft has finally admitted that the minimum amount of RAM you really should have is 16 gig.
Okay.
In terms of a drive, I would say a solid state drive.
Yeah.
I would say minimum of 1 terabyte.
Okay.
Certainly 2 terabytes is better. And you can get desktops nowadays with i5s and i7s and i9s. I would, you know, an i7 is perfectly adequate for most people. You don't need to spend the money for an i9 at this point. And so if you get a Windows 11, a machine with one that comes with Windows 11 on it, you're good to go. 16 gig of RAM, at least an i7, at least a terabyte. And, you know, they have laptops with both wired and Wi-Fi connections.
Yep.
I always suggest that on your main machine, if it's a desktop, you have an uninterruptible power supply.
Yep. Say it again?
An uninterruptible power supply. So if the power goes out, it works kind of like a laptop. It starts running off the battery until the power comes back on.
Like an APC unit or something like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Exactly. That's a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply.
APC happens to be one of the biggest brands.
Right, right.
It's one of those things where the brand is confused with the product.
Right. It also lets you get a screen that will suit your eyes. I need a larger screen with a faster refresh rate because although I'm still a spring chicken, my eyes are old. So having a faster refresh rate means I don't have headaches.
Spring on Pluto.
Get out. Get out now. Go on. Go on. It's an old spring, and it doesn't have much spring to it anymore.
Pluto hasn't even completed one orbit since it was discovered 100 years ago.
Right, exactly. I would you know, take a look at the good monitors because you get, you know, you have with a desktop, you have the choice of big monitors, multiple monitors, high refresh rate, high res monitors. So, you know, get what makes you happy. And again, in terms of keyboard and mice, you have other options as well. I like the ergonomic keyboards, the Wave keyboards, because they have carpal tunnel and they help me. And of course, you can't get that on a laptop. And that leaves you then free for the very few times you go places. What do you do? If what you mostly do is web browsing, checking your email, which you can do online, stuff like that. A Chromebook is perfect for that. It costs less. It does everything you need it to do. And if it breaks, which laptops sometimes do, or if you lose it, which sometimes happens, you're not out so much.
Okay. Great advice. Do people still feel the need to have a DVD player on their, at least an external one, or have one built into their PC to play older DVDs and CD-ROMs and that kind of thing?
A lot of people still rip their ROM, their CDs and DVDs, so that they can put that music on their phone or whatever. So you'll find people have those.
Or in case the disc physically wears out.
I have a Plex server at home, so I rip all my DVDs to that so I can play them on any TV in the house anytime I want to watch them. But So, yes, if you do anything like that, then having a DVD burner, a DVD player or a CD player gives you that capability. And again, the beauty of a desktop is that you can get a small tower that will accommodate those things.
Yeah. Get a small tower that, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Well, it will accommodate putting in a built-in CD-ROM or DVD player.
Right.
Which would be faster than trying to use an external USB one.
Right.
Okay, yeah, good point. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That kind of helps me with my decision-making, and appreciate your show. Enjoy listening to it.
Thanks so much, Scott. Thank you very much.
Hey, fellas, have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And let's not forget, our pledge drive is coming up. I don't know what made me think of that. But, yeah, in general, you get the most flexibility with a desktop in terms of what you can put in it. Now, most people don't care. They don't need all that extra stuff or want all that extra stuff. But for those who do, that flexibility is very much appreciated. And like I said before, you pay a premium for the laptop itself, the ability to carry it around. A desktop, generally speaking, gives you more bang for the same buck than you would pay for a laptop. You can add more RAM, you can add a better hard drive, you can get a faster processor because you're not having to deal with the form factor of a laptop. So, and again, for people who are actually going out in public, what do you need your computer for when you go out in public? For most people, it's email, web browsing. That's pretty much it. And you can do that with a Chromebook very easily for a lot less money than another laptop. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Well, that would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
Mike forgot he was here, I think, for a minute.
And I forgot I was next.
Right. And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are falling apart. We are sound bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Steve's got us up on YouTube at least.
Yeah, YouTube and Facebook and Twitch. We're all three on.
All three of them. Look at him. He's a genius. I don't get it.
So the backup camera didn't work, so I went to the tertiary camera.
Sure. we have a fail-safe system,
except
you fail down to the tertiaries.
Yeah, except when you put your paper in front of your camera. Yeah. Oh, we can read whatever the next news story is.
Right, that's the last news story. All right, a nasty new surprise for Microsoft that just provided a sting in the tail to last week's Patch Tuesday. You knew it was coming. Just as we saw in July, threat actors have exploited long-forgotten Internet Explorer code lurking inside hundreds of millions of PCs to execute attacks. Buried though that code might be, it has exposed a gaping security hole. The U.S. government cybersecurity agency wasted little time adding CVE-2024-434161 to its known exploited vulnerabilities, or KEV catalog, warning that Microsoft Windows MS HTML platform, their Microsoft HTML platform, contains a user interface misinterpretation of critical information vulnerability that allows attackers to spoof a web page.
Misinterpretation?
Misinterpretation of critical information. There's a song in that somewhere.
Yeah.
It was misinterpretation of critical information across the entire nation.
Most likely.
Most likely. CISA adds that this vulnerability has been exploited in conjunction with an... Oh, where else do you get song? Oh, this whole channel. This whole station does songs. I knew that. I don't know. Look, I'm just not responsible
today. Should we hang up and start over?
This show is a mess today. It really is.
Unplug it and plug it back in again.
Things are not. They're just not. I don't care. CISA adds that this vulnerability has been exploited in conjunction with an older vulnerability from July, raising alarm bells at the time. Checkpoint warned that attackers are using special Windows Internet shortcut files to open URLs with IE instead of Chrome or Edge. Doing so means the attacker gains significant advantages in exploiting the victim's computer. CISA has mandated PCs be updated by October 7th, which is 3 weeks from now. As ever, the formal mandate applies to federal employees, but many public and private organizations follow CISA's mandates, given its remit to help every organization better manage vulnerabilities and keep pace with threat activity. Many home users follow their advice, too. Clearly, any PC updated from July onwards will have addressed the older vulnerability, while the latest update patches the second vulnerability. Trend Micro ZDI, which discloses the second threat, warned that it allows remote attackers to execute arbitrary code on affected installations of Microsoft Windows, which triggers an attack by way of a malicious web page that a user is tricked into visiting. The MSHTML platform is used by Internet Explorer mode in Microsoft Edge as well as other applications through web browser control. That means this ancient code is sitting on every Windows computer just waiting to be exploited, even if you've never installed Internet Explorer itself. That's why all Windows users should immediately apply the Microsoft patch to protect themselves or boot into Linux. Are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
So this likely means it goes all the way back to Windows XP.
It goes all the way back to Windows XP.
But they're only patching 10 on.
That 10 on. And the other thing you have to remember is that Microsoft's Outlook uses that code.
Yep.
So if you haven't patched it, simply opening a malicious email will get you hacked. So do the patching. I know a lot of people wait to patch, and I get that.
And
don't wait for this one.
We hear a lot of people, so I didn't click on anything. You don't have to click on it. Just viewing it is the problem. So how do I stop that? Don't go to websites with ads.
Right. Good luck on that.
Yeah.
Ours may be the only one.
Yeah. And so you try to run an ad blocker. And then the website says, oh, you're running an ad blocker. You can't come to my ad. You can't come to my website. So you turn off the ad blocker and get infected by a malicious ad.
Well, exactly. And I get it. People need money. I'm running on the ragged thin edge with the websites that I keep up. But so I understand people want to make money off of them. But ads are now compromised. You know, over the decades, people have tried to figure out how to make money off of the web, and the only thing they've come up with is ads. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They tried micropayments. They tried all kinds of other things. Donations work, and this station is grateful to each and every person who has made a donation to it. But, you know, not everybody can ask for donations. It's not, you know, we're a not-for-profit. We're not not-for-profit. I forget what the term is, but we are that, and so
donations are tax deductible. Maybe tax deductible. Check with your tax attorney.
Right, but theoretically they are tax deductible. Yeah. So we ask for donations, and we are public supported, absolutely.
And a lot of that came from television, and before that, radio, where the shows were free because there were ads.
Right.
And so that model worked, and it just moved itself to the Internet. The issue is that the FTC enforces truth in advertising laws.
Not anymore. Reagan got rid of those.
Yeah. Well, there's still some of them around.
Yeah.
But only for broadcast media.
Right.
The Internet doesn't count.
Right.
So they can lie all they want. And that's what all the malicious ads lie. Say you have a virus. Click here to talk to tech support who want to get into your computer to clean you out. And they clean out your bank accounts while they're there too. The ones I love, someone may be attempting to hack your computer. Yes, you are right now.
Exactly.
So they're not lying.
Well, I got a great one the other day. I mean, it was clean. Everything was spelled right. The grammar was all correct. All the graphics were right. The only problem was I don't have an account at that institution.
Mm-hmm.
So it clearly was a scam, but it was a good one.
Yeah.
And we've said this many, many times. I mean, I'm going to say it again, and we've got a page up for this stuff. One thing you absolutely want to do is right now, go call on Monday morning, call your bank if they're closed now, or do it now if they're open, and find out what their web page is, asking them, right? Go into a branch, ask them what their phone number is, and ask them what the URL for their web page is, and put those things in your phone. Put the phone number in your phone, and you know, name it your bank, and get the web page bookmarked on your computer.
Now don't trust the message that pops up saying, you know, click here to call your bank.
Right. Don't call the phone number in an ad.
Don't Google your bank's phone number
because it's going to be wrong.
You may not. Well, Google's pretty good about it. But the other browsers aren't
maybe.
That. Yeah.
And putting the phone number of your bank in your phone with a name means that if it comes up with that name, it's them. If it comes up with unknown number or just the number, it's not them and you don't have to answer. In general, if they're not in your phone book, and they just come up as unknown number or just with a phone number and no name, let it go to voicemail. I promise you, if it's important, you can call them or they can call you back. I promise you that will happen. So don't answer unknown numbers. On both Android and iOS, you have call screening. I use it all the time. Anytime a number comes up that I don't recognize, I hit the call screening button and a voice comes in and says, hi, this is, we're screening the call. Tell us who you are. Every single time they hang up. Every single time.
Or I like it when their computer starts giving the spiel to my computer.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But that means it was a scam. It was a scammer who is not going to waste their time talking to voicemail. You save yourself a lot by using these features. They're built into your phone. You're not paying extra for them. You should be using them. I'll tell you, I love calls. And every once in a while I had a call, you know, I did not have the number in my phone. I said, go to voicemail. And I got a response saying, Nick, this is so-and-so. I had to get a new phone and I got a new number too. Okay, I hit answer.
Yeah.
Because I recognize the voice and the name.
New phone, who dis?
Who dis, exactly. So I was able to answer the phone and talk to my friend and put her phone number now in my phone so I have it correct, the new phone number in my phone. And it's not a difficult thing to do. It's right there on the screen. I'm assuming on an iPhone it works just like an Android phone. Mm-hmm. When the phone number comes up, it says screen. There's a button that says screen. Hit the screen button and then listen.
It doesn't say screen. What does it say?
Yeah, yours says something, but it's the same idea.
Yeah.
So you get a button for that. And use it. You'll find that there's just... life gets so much simpler when you don't have to worry about any of that nonsense. So get yourself used to using this call screening stuff. And for those of you who are interested in those things, you will find under some important links on our website, soundbites.org, Third link down is frauds and scams. And it talks about some of the resources that you will need if you think you've been scammed. And down at the bottom, there's four main bullet points on how to keep yourself safe. And the number one thing is never answer a call from a number you don't know. Never need any of the other tips.
And there's a setting in your phone, Android and iOS, to just don't ring when the number's not known.
Right.
So that you never get unknown numbers. Now, our business, we have to answer unknown phone numbers because they might be a customer. So,
right.
But, so we're inundated with spam calls. But then we get that scam likely. So if you do get a scam call and you want to, there's a report a scam button.
Right.
To help other people realize that's a scam call.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Good afternoon, Nick. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, just wonderful for a Saturday. I have a question that I think I may have asked before, but kind of lost it in the fish here. I use Chrome Flex as my operating system on an older computer, but I use it on a fob by booting from the fob.
Yep.
When I go into the program, if you will, or use that, and I go to the update portion to update the software, if you will, it always says that it's updated. Now, when I take that fob out, go to another machine, and download the program again onto the fob and do whatever it does with Chrome Flex to make that fob work, it then comes back with a new updated software.
Yes, if I understand you correctly, if you're creating an image from the original downloaded image on your desktop, you will only get that version and it will have to be updated. You can download the latest image of Chrome OS Flex and use that instead.
Correct. Putting it on the fob and using it on that fob that I'm using on that machine.
Right.
There's no, that doesn't automatically update, or there's not the Chrome Flex software somewhere that would update it off a fob.
The fob itself will update, but you said you then go and redo the fob, right?
Correct, but it won't do it by itself. You know, like when you do a Windows update and you press, do I need updates? It would then update it on the machine.
Right, but that won't happen with the downloaded version. You have to download the latest version directly yourself.
Okay, so then there is no way of... Now, if I were to put that version on my machine and wipe out everything else, would it update then?
Yes, absolutely. It would update the version that's running.
Correct.
Not the image that you put on the fob.
Well, so are you putting an installer image on the fob, or are you installing it on the fob?
I'm running it off of the fob.
It's a running Chrome. It should update itself, shouldn't it?
Here's the problem. What it's done is it's updated. When he doesn't update, it updates the fob.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said he goes home and re-images the fob. Which has an old image. So it updated the fob, which has the newest image, but then he overwrote it with the original image from the hard drive.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe we're misunderstanding each other. I don't do anything with that image other than leaving it on the fob. I run it off of the fob. I load the computer running it off the fob, not off the computer.
Okay, and so it updates the fob.
Correct.
And
but
then
when
you...
it now
go ahead.
Now I've done that, and then I go to press update, say a week later, to see if there's any updates, and it says that it's updated.
Right.
It's okay with the version that's on there, but then when I go plug it in to another computer to download the new software, there is a new version.
Well, there's often a new version.
Why doesn't it find it when he... wait a minute, hit update again.
Right.
Well, I've done that a couple of times. I've done that a couple of times. I keep hitting the update, and it keeps telling me it's... Unless I'm not catching it at the right time, I don't know. But it seems like I'll... Like today, let's say I'll go on the machine today, push update, and it says that it's okay, but then I pull the fob out, go to another machine, and download a new version to that fob to run it off of that fob, and it says it's a new version. When I restart it up and run it, it shows a new version number.
So the installer image is getting updated, but the live running image isn't seeing the update.
Correct.
Well, the live running system updates itself every 4 weeks in the background.
But when you hit update, shouldn't it see if there's a new update?
And you should be able to update it, yeah, just by yourself, but there may not actually be an update.
But then when he goes to download an image, it is an update.
Yeah, correct.
I think I'm following.
So
I download version 2, put it on the computer. I tell the computer to check for updates. It says no updates. So I immediately go to download, and version 3 downloads. Why didn't the computer see version 3?
That's a lovely question.
Yeah.
Different
release channels? No.
Would it not do it because it's running the OS off of the fob itself? It's really not doing anything with the computer other than loading that operating system. Well,
yeah, the computer shouldn't know or shouldn't care what the boot drive is.
Okay.
So are you saying, again, here's where I get confused.
Okay.
You run Chrome OS Flex on, let's say, a laptop, and it says there's an update, so you update it. You then shut down that laptop, take the fob, and put it in a computer, and you run it on that computer, and it says there's an update.
No, I re-download the image onto that fob.
He downloads a new installer, and the new installer is updated. But
correct.
The live running version didn't see that update that the installer downloaded.
Right, and the fob is in the first computer that I'm running. It's running off of that fob on that computer. I haven't downloaded the version onto that computer. That computer's still booting from that thumb drive.
Yeah, so it shouldn't know. It just says, oh, this is the boot drive. Does this version need to be updated?
Correct.
And it's saying no. But when you go back to Chrome and download the current version, it is a new version.
Correct.
So is it like the stable channel versus the dev channel? Maybe the installer image is on a different channel than the...
How are you getting to this update that you're downloading?
I would go to Chrome, and there's a little extension that downloads the latest Chrome Flex OS onto a thumb drive. It erases the current version on there, or gets rid of everything that's on that thumb drive and puts this new version on the thumb drive.
Okay, what can you tell me the name of that extension?
Oh boy, off the top of my head, I don't know. It's like a recovery
Chromebook recovery utility, maybe.
Yes, and you go, the utility comes up, and then you can pick your machine and things like that, but I just pick Chrome Flex OS and then download it to the thumb drive.
Yeah, that's on the Google's created USB installer.
So it should be the latest one. I'm a little stumped here.
Yeah, why wouldn't the OS see there's an update when the installer does?
Well, it just picks the whatever's up there to be. I've done it a week. I do it every week, if you will. Saturday, actually, watching you guys sometimes is the time that I'll do it. And sometimes it has not downloaded a new version. I'll put it back in the machine, start it back up, do whatever it takes to do it, and it shows the same version that was on there last week. So I don't get a new version, we'll say, every week, but I would say probably three times out of the four during the week I might get one.
Interesting. You know, you don't have to do that, by the way. The update...
Well, okay, that would be my next question.
In Chrome OS Flex itself, you can do an update there.
And that's where you're saying it doesn't see there is an update.
Exactly. That is correct, too. I'll go to the page where it lists all what the current version I'm using is and has the button next to it that says update. And every time I hit that, it says that it's updated.
I thought you were saying updating.
Update, yeah.
No,
but then when he goes and downloads the new installer,
it's a newer version.
It's a newer version. So why didn't the running version find it? We don't know. we'll research that.
We will research that, but I'm afraid I don't know.
Maybe some of our other Flex users might know why.
Yes. Well, that's why I kind of figured I'd call you guys and ask the question again. Maybe somebody else using it has run into this problem or has this problem. Again, it's not a problem to download it every week and do it. I sit here, listen to you guys, and do all my updating and everything. It works out okay, but it just doesn't sit with me right that it won't update itself.
No, I understand that. And I will research this, but I don't have an answer right now. All right, we got that music, okay, which is very low, by the way, Michael, tells me that we're done with the first hour. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of Michael Oden, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is top of the hour, and we'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. On Tuesday, Google announced plans to implement content authentication technology across its products to help users distinguish between human-created and AI-generated images. Over several coming months, the tech giant will integrate the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, or C2PA, standard, a system designed to track the origin and editing of history... Hi, how are you? A system designed to track the origin and editing history of digital content into its search ads and potentially YouTube services. However, it's an open question of whether a technological solution can address the ancient social issue of trust in recorded media produced by strangers. A group of tech companies created the C2PA system beginning in 2019 in an attempt to combat misleading, realistic synthetic media online. As AI-generated content becomes more prevalent and much more realistic, experts have worried that it may be difficult for users to determine the authenticity of images they encounter. The C2PA standard creates a digital trail for content backed by an online signing authority that includes metadata information about where images originate and how they've been modified. Google will incorporate this C2PA standard into its search results, allowing users to see if an image was created or edited using AI tools. The tech giant's About This image feature in Google Search, Lens, and Circle to Search will display this information when available. In a blog post, Lori Richardson, Google's Vice President of Trust and Safety. In other news, Google has a Vice President of Trust and Safety. acknowledge the complexities of establishing content provenance across platforms. She stated, establishing and signaling content provenance remains a complex challenge with a range of considerations based on the products or services. And while we know there's no silver bullet solution for all content online, working with others in the industry is critical to create sustainable and interoperable solutions. And other buzzwords. The company plans to use the C2PA's latest technical standard, version 2.1, which reportedly offers improved security against tampering attacks. Its use will extend beyond search, since Google intends to incorporate C2PA metadata into its ad systems as a way to enforce key policies. YouTube may also see integration of C2PA information for camera-captured content in the future. AI image generators would need to support the standard for C2PA information to be included in each generated file, which will likely preclude open-source image synthesis models like Flux. So perhaps in practice, more authentic camera-authored media will be labeled with C2PA than AI-generated images. Beyond that, maintaining the metadata requires a complete tool chain that supports C2PA every step along the way, including at the source and any software used to edit or retouch the images. Currently, only a handful of camera manufacturers, such as Leica, support the C2PA standard. Nikon and Canon have pledged to adopt it, but there's still uncertainty about whether Apple and Google will implement C2PA in their smartphone devices. Yes, I started out by saying Google announced plans to implement it, and I'm also announcing that Google may not implement it. C2PA may become one of the many tools used to authenticate content by determining whether the information came from a credible source if the C2PA metadata are preserved, but it is unlikely to be a complete solution for AI-generated misinformation on its own. So it's still a game of who do you trust? Give us a call if you trust us. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We're seeing a lot of content in general that's been generated by AI these days. Some programs are just uncannily good. Others are pretty good. Others only fool you if you're not paying attention, which so many of us are not. But there is a lot of it out there, and you have to be very, very careful what you believe these days.
And sort of this is...
So this has been an issue since cameras were invented. Who was the guy in the Civil War that took all the pictures?
And he
wrote a book on how to compose your picture to get what you want it really to look like. So pictures have never been accurate.
Yeah, many of his battlefield pictures of the Civil War were staged. They were real dead bodies, but they dragged them around to where he thought they would be aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. And it's only getting worse. You have a photography expert can theoretically tell the difference between a real picture and a fake picture, but a staged picture, because that's the real picture that was taken.
Right.
But now a generated picture, you count how many fingers are on their hand.
Right.
But eventually, that will get Matthew Brady.
Thank you.
That will get better and better and better as the AI generators get better, and now we're already seeing that with chain of custody. Learning stuff this week about chain of custody. The person who took the picture, the person who developed the film, or handled the SD card, you have to maintain that chain of custody to be able to submit that photograph as evidence. Otherwise, there is no way to know that someone tampered with it along the way.
Right, and the C2PA theoretically deals with all of that.
Yeah.
But the problem is every one of your tools has to be C2PA authenticated.
Right. And there's a couple.
Not all of them are.
And there's a couple of different standards that are being touted. Yeah.
Right. So, if you use some open source third party product to edit your photos, like the GIMP, or you use a third-party product to edit your video, like Handbrake or one of the mm-hmm. others, they may not have the C2PA tools in them. Or if they do, you may not have activated them. So I think we'll see more and more companies do that because I think what we're going to see is more and more people are going to be saying, we don't know if this is real because there's no C2PAA data.
Right.
And then, of course, can the C2PA data be spoofed? So we'll see where all this goes in the future. But the reality remains, you know, be skeptical. The more skeptical you are, the less likely you are to be pulled in by the nonsense. So be very careful what you see. I did a talk for a group where I talked about this. And yes, the number of fingers is important. Being able to say, okay, this picture, this candidate says this picture was taken here, but on that date, the candidate was in a city 300 miles away. So how did that happen? You will often find that if people have sweatshirts or hoodies or whatever that have writing on them, the writing doesn't make sense. It's not real words. It's often not real letters. But you have to look carefully to see that.
Worse is someone who gets tattoos of an Asian character because it looks right. And it turns out it says Kung Pao Chicken. Or
or this dog has been neutered.
Yeah.
So one of the pictures I showed, you had to look closely to see that one guy had three arms. So you had one hand down by the hand closest to you, the arm closest to you is down by his side. The arm away from you is reaching out, but you could also see that he had his other arm down by his side. So,
yep. It wasn't Zaphod?
It wasn't Zaphod. That's two heads. That's a whole different thing. So
he called himself Phil.
He called himself Phil. So be aware, and don't just look at a picture. Look at a picture, and we've seen many pictures where crowds were duplicated and things like that. That's a little different. That's not AI generated. That's old fashioned manipulating a photograph. We're talking about AI creating the entire picture as a whole thing.
There's also real photographs that, depending on the angle they were taken, show something weird.
Right.
The famous ones of people in the Tower of Pisa trying to push the tower back up.
Right.
Just showing the angle. Now, that's a real photograph, but it's not really happening. There's a perspective and an angle issue there. So how do you decide what's real and what's not?
Right.
That's when you have the expert testimony, you know, saying, I took this picture, I left it, you know, it's in my camera. It's crazy.
And, you know, we're not talking about wedding photographer level stuff.
Yeah.
Where, you know, one the bride or the groom has the groom or the bride in their hand and all that, yep. That stuff. And nowadays you can get, Google does it, I'm sure Apple does it too. You can take two separate pictures. So I could put Michael and Steve next to each other and take a picture. Then I could hand Michael the camera, and I could stand on Steve's other side. As long as Steve didn't move when Michael took the picture, I could then tell Google, merge those two pictures on Steve, mm-hmm. so it looks like the three of us are standing together.
Yeah.
That's magic. It's great, so you can be in pictures you took. I get that. But it also is not real.
There are so much processing done by your phone, computational photography has become the buzzword, that you are never seeing the real image that you actually took. Most of the time, it'll take in that fraction of a second between you push the shutter button and the preview shows up, it took maybe a dozen pictures, high contrast, low contrast, made a high dynamic range, this filter, that filter, to give you the best possible representation. So every picture you take with your camera phone is a generated picture.
And a lot of them now you'll see best shot in the lower corner.
Yeah.
If you hit that, you see them all.
Yep.
And you pick one, and it merges in and erases the rest.
Yeah. So what you often see is in the higher end prosumer and pro digital cameras, there's a RAW format,
right,
which is the RAW image the camera sensor took, and then you can manipulate it in Photoshop all you like.
Right. Exactly. be aware and be careful. Again, you know, if you're taking pictures of your friends and you want to be in that picture, go for it. Knock yourself out. If you want to be a wedding photographer and, you know, put in overlay things and all that, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
But when somebody presents you a photo that's a little hinky.
A shark swimming through the street during a hurricane.
Right.
Probably not.
So be aware and be skeptical. The more skeptical you are, the more likely it is you're correct these days. I hate to say that, but it's true. So be aware and be careful.
So Sharknado didn't really happen?
Are you sitting down? Sharknado 2 happened.
Yeah.
Not Sharknado. So be careful.
There is a report, according to CNN, in 1877 of a water spout dropping some small alligators on a South Carolina farm. They got caught up in the water spout.
Were small alligators. Yeah. It was a big water spout.
Yeah. It's like when the cow gets picked up by the twister.
Right. Those are real. The destructive power of a hurricane is pretty amazing. So that's,
and leave it to Hollywood to take it to the absurd extreme.
Yep.
And there's about, what, 6, 7 Sharknado movies?
Right.
That's what's really crazy.
It amuses me. I won't deny that.
Yep. Oh, and there's video games and comics, too.
Really?
Well, Ian Ziering needs the work, apparently.
Right. I'm sorry, Michael, who is this?
Will.
Will, from Hampton, Virginia. Hi, Will, what's up?
Hey, Nick and panel, not too much. How's it up there in Greece, Rochester area?
It's pretty nice, actually, today. We have thunderstorms later, but it's nice right now.
Just in time to not be able to fly today.
Yes, Steve is upset. So what's up?
So what do you think that as far as the implementation of the C2PA in my Android phone, you think it's still a few years off?
Well, theoretically, not a few years. Theoretically, Google is going to be pushing this pretty hard. I believe they're going to start. Well, it might be because they're going to start with the web. And they're going to start with images on the web because that's more prevalent, right? Mm. If you want to put an image on your phone and show it to one person, I mean, how many people can you show it to, right? But when you put it on the web, a billion people see it. So they're going to start there, and then work their way down. But once the technology is solidified, then adding it to the phone, making the phone C2PA certified, will be much easier than starting from scratch. So they're starting with the web first.
Mm-hmm. And apparently OpenAI has already embraced C2PA, according to websites I'm reading. So images generated by DALL-E already have C2PA markings in them.
Right. So if you've got a C2PA compliant system, you can then look at those metadata and say, oh, this was generated.
But then how easy is it to remove that metadata and supply the photo as real anyway? There was a camera that was trying to embed that in the hardware of the camera so that images could be guaranteed to be real. But I haven't heard much about that camera lately.
Yeah. So it's going to be, I think, a while before we see it in our phones. I certainly don't see anything in my Linux system that says it does C2PA. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it.
Right. Are we about to go to the break? Because I have a question about my laptop.
Go ahead and ask the question. If we have to go to the break, we'll pick you up on the other side.
Okay, thanks to you guys, I've managed to keep my Toshiba satellite I'd say going on about 5 years now. I think I bought it in No, longer than that. I think about 2017 was when I purchased it. And it was a refurbished laptop. And because of you guys, I put Zorin OS on it about a few years back, and that's helped me to make the laptop last a little bit longer. But it's always already starting to show signs of age. Just recently, the optical drive went out. And so I tried the software end of the solutions, and that didn't yield anything. The CDs are loading, but they are not booting up the material into the operating system into the laptop. When I click, they're basically not opening up. And so I'm pretty sure that it's a hardware failure, but those are the troubleshooting steps that I went through.
The good steps, but I think you're right. It's the hardware.
Yeah. And so I really, one thing about doing is actually buying another internal drive for the laptop and replacing the internal drive. And I wanted to hear your thoughts, your opinions on that.
Well, if you can.
Yeah.
Finding parts is tricky.
Right. For a 7-year-old laptop.
You said this was a Toshiba satellite?
Yeah.
A lot of times you can find a Toshiba compatible internal drive.
Go ahead. Most of what I've found, frequently shop on eBay has been mostly refurbished stuff.
Right. And do you know the model number?
Oh, yeah. C55D B5308.
Toshiba.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Can you do the number again?
I'm sorry. C55D Charlie 55 Delta Baker 5308.
I'm sorry. C55D Charlie. Well, I found a link on iFixit, which is one of the big websites. Yeah, they're a big website for showing take aparts on how to take things apart, although now there's a lot of YouTube channels on that too.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them before, yeah.
Well, there's also, you can buy an external drive.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so unless you really need to carry the drive around, unless you need to do the laptop when you're mobile, how are you? Unless you need to use the thing when you're mobile, and I mean really mobile as opposed to I can put it down on a desktop, You can use an external drive. It's going to be slower, but it'll work.
Yeah.
And there are I found one on Amazon, a SATA optical drive that works with external to a Toshiba C55, C55D, C55DT.
I found an internal one with a SATA interface. So that's the other question is, what's the interface of the current optical drive in the computer, and is it a standard SATA drive? It's probably not old enough to be PETA.
Yeah, I think it's going to be SATA.
Yeah, I found here's another internal one as well. Yeah, cheap too. So you can find them on eBay, you can find them on Amazon, I suppose.
Whether they're any good or not, we won't know. That's the problem.
Right. At least on Amazon, you have a 30-day refund thing, and you can get protection.
Amazon's a lot pricier, though, I found.
Well, honestly, this one's $31, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Are you talking about external or internal?
This is internal, and it's a SATA optical drive for the Toshiba C55, C55D, and C55DT.
Huh. Okay. That's what's up.
So, you know, it's it is what it is. So
yeah, but yeah, check sure. the return policy. Where one thing I keep getting missed on is I go to Amazon, but then way over on the side in tiny letters is ships from another company, sold by, and even another company, right. Returns right. none.
All right, I'm sorry, we got to go. Are you done, do you want to hang on?
Yeah. I'm done. You pretty much gave
okay.
What
I got to go.
So thank you.
Thanks.
Very much, guys.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. No, Dave Enright. Dave Enright. Forget Dave Enright. It's Steve Ray. It's Michael Oden. It's me, Nick Francesco. It's you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. It's member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, I am not doing a fake island accent of any sort. We are Sound Bites, but I like the music.
You just stick with your native Rochester accent.
Rochester. On Tuesday, give us a call, 585-966-CHAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. On Tuesday, Google announced plans to implement contact. We just did that one. What is wrong with me? I'm telling you.
We're having a hell of a show today, aren't you?
It's not falling apart. I don't get it. Here we go. A nasty new surprise from Microsoft has just provided a sting in the tail to last week's patch Tuesday. Just as we saw in July, threat actors have exploited long-forgotten Internet Explorer code. I just did that one, too. What in the heck is going on here?
Go that way.
Let's go the other way. Here it is. Well, we'll forget that. We'll just take the phone call because it's Michael's doing that part, and I won't screw up. Except I'll probably screw up the name.
You get the name wrong. Yeah, you still can screw up. There's okay. still time.
I can screw up. I believe it's going to be Andy, and it's probably from Greece, or it could be somebody else entirely. Who knows?
No, it's Andy from Greece.
Okay, what's up?
I was listening before the 1 o'clock break that I had, I was going in to get my hair cut, so I couldn't call at that point. The gentleman with the problem with the Chrome OS Flex?
Yes.
One of the things he said that caught my ear was that when he took the USB stick and put it into a different computer to download the new update or operating system, whichever, it would erase everything that was on the stick. But then he'd put it back into the laptop and it wouldn't pick up the new update. But it erased everything out, and he was booting off the USB stick. So if he'd taken everything, if he was trying to boot off the USB stick, and it had erased everything, how would it still show the old one?
Yeah, that's not quite what happened. What would happen is he would put it in computer A, download the update, and install it. It didn't erase the whole hard drive, the whole fob, the whole thumb drive. It just updated it. Then he would take that same fob, put it in laptop B, and it would say, no, you got to go and update. So it is possible that drive, that fob is write only, which I didn't mention to Rich. But if it's write only, that will happen. But you should get an error message that says can't write. So other than that, I don't know at this point. I'll have to do some research.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I'd heard him say it cleaned out the fob, and
well, when
if that
he,
was the case, I
yeah, when he downloaded a new image, he made me think he had two flash drives, one with the installer and one that he downloaded on his computer and then installed it on the flash drive.
Or he may have used the term downloaded as opposed to meaning updated.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay.
In space. So,
but the running the running version of Chrome on the computer did not find any updates when a new installer was had an update.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that was just what my ear caught. So I figured, all right, I'll point that out. And
thanks.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm. It didn't make a lot of sense except that when he said he it cleaned out the fob.
Right.
And then it was like, well, why would it see the old one if you cleaned out the fob with the new install? That didn't make any sense at all.
But, right. No, I agree.
All right. Well, we'll go back to listening.
All right. Thanks.
I'll go back to my corner now.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Stay in your corner.
All right.
All right.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you.
I don't know what that problem is, and I don't know how to fix it, but we'll do some research. And
you had said that Chrome updates itself all the time anyway. Maybe if he waits long enough, the update will be there.
Well, Chrome OS Flex updates itself about every month, once a month,
yeah.
Every 4 weeks. So if he just waits, he will get the latest update. Right.
But it should find it when you say update now. We've seen that sometimes.
If there is an update, yes.
Yeah. We see that. In fact, we're seeing it now with the iOS update, that there's a billion iPhones.
Yeah.
Apple doesn't want a billion people downloading at the same time, so they won't make it available to everyone at the same time.
Right.
Maybe so. Maybe that's what he's running into.
Right. And we see that in a lot of operating systems. Google does the same thing with Android, and you know, it rolls out to certain models first.
Right.
And then down and down and down. Now,
and then maybe across the country through their CDNs.
Right.
So people in New York get it at noon. Well, everyone gets it at noon their time.
Right. And the other thing is, with Android, often enough, what happens is they put it out and it gets downloaded to Pixel phones immediately. But for every other device, the manufacturer of that device gets to download it themselves, make any changes they want to make, maybe change the UI, add their own bloatware that they get paid for before they offer it to you. So while I on a Pixel phone may get an update day one, you on a Samsung phone may have to wait a week. It should not be true of Chrome OS Flex. I'm not saying it is. I'm just pointing out that when you're talking about phones, there's a whole lot of additional issues. We've often said the big dog has to be the last one to mark the tree. So you know, Google updates it, then the phone carrier gets it, the manufacturer gets it. I don't know which order that's in before you get it. We see that too often, and we also see different choices. Right. So you on a Samsung phone and somebody else on a Nokia phone. No, well,
your name is?
An LG phone. We'll see the update at different times, and we'll see a couple of different choices in the update because some of them have one set of bloatware and another one has a different set of bloatware, and Pixel phones have no bloatware. So it may be a different download for each type of phone.
So, this week, Nokia was founded 160 years ago during the American Civil War.
Yeah,
and they're now selling phones.
Yep,
but they sell a lot of cool stuff.
And I think they also sell tires. They sell all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, rubber started out as a pulp mill. Only since the 90s have they been doing telecommunication stuff.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, I think it's Richard from Irondequoit again. Hiya, Richard.
Hey, I'm not the same one as previous. There's a lot of us, I guess.
There are two Richard. Wait, hold on. There are two Richards in Irondequoit? Unbelievable.
Apparently.
Unbelievable.
Hard to believe, right?
Okay. What's up, Richard?
How do I turn off ad blocker? I go through a website where I make a few bucks through them if I buy something from a cyber retailer, and they always pop up with, well, can't deal with you now because you have ad blocker turned on.
Which ad blocker?
Sorry?
Which ad blocker? There's dozens of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I use a Windows machine and Windows 11, I guess.
You would have installed it in the first place. So there is no ad blocker natively built into Windows. You would have had to install something. And it usually puts an icon in the toolbar.
So generally, okay. So what browser are you using?
where I go, Microsoft Edge, I believe.
Okay. So in Edge, if you installed, let's say, for the sake of discussion, you installed uBlock Origin as your ad blocker.
That is the name of one, then?
Yes.
Does sound familiar. uBlock
Origin.
Origin?
Yes.
O-R-I-G-I-N. Okay, and?
Yep. Okay, so when you do that, it puts a small icon that looks like a shield, a red shield, in the bar at the top to the right of where you type in the address.
Okay.
It also will then overlay that with a number of the things that it blocked. But if you hover your mouse over it, you can see the name. So in this case, it says uBlock Origin. If you click on it, you'll see a big power button. And if you click that, it turns it off. And there's a little recycle image next to it. If you hit that, it reloads the page without the ad blocker on. They all work pretty much the same way, but unless I know which one you have, I can't direct you exactly on how to make it work.
There is a, I need to clarify my previous statement, there is a basic ad blocker and tracking blocker built into most browsers. And I'm posting a link on how to turn that off in Microsoft Edge. But I don't know if there's a way to just turn it off temporarily. I know uBlock Origin, I use Ghostery, and I can pause the blocking for a while on a site. But then as soon as you block your blocker, then the bad stuff can get in too. So that's why you want it to turn back on again.
Right.
But in Edge, you'd have to go into settings and under privacy and search engine.
So each website, each browser would have its own type of blocker. It sounds like what you're
right,
saying.
Right, yep. And then there's dozens of third-party ad blockers that people will install in their browsers. And then you quickly find out that many websites won't work if you have an ad blocker turned on.
Right. And so if you have not installed your own ad blocker, then it is likely that the ad blocker that is being triggered is built into Microsoft Edge. And Steve has posted a link on our website on how to turn that one off.
Wow. Oh, I guess ad blockers are a good thing. However, they're a complicated thing for the novice like myself.
Right.
Well, then the websites have put in ad blocker blockers.
Right.
Because they want to.
Oh.
So the problem, I would say the problem isn't ads. The problem is bad ads.
Right.
And there's no way to distinguish
that
between a good ad and a bad ad. So the industry is trying to work out appropriate ads. So I don't need to see ads on certain things, but I do like to see ads on other things. So they try to track what ads you click on or what ads you pause on. So when you're doom scrolling, if you pause for half a second, oh, you must like that. I'll send you more of those. But then the bad guys found out they can buy an ad too. You almost have to give credit to the first bad guy that realized he could buy an ad selling, you have a virus, please call this phone number.
Right.
I really appreciate that. Now I've got more of an insight into what I'm dealing with here. So I'll play around with Microsoft Edge, purposely go there,
yeah,
and see if I can come up with a red shield per Nick.
Yep.
Nick, I've given you the fee for being on your website and answering questions. Do you answer everything?
Yes.
Eventually.
So I put out a newsletter every week, and you can sign up for that newsletter at asknick.com. And I answer people's computer questions as they come in, but I only answer two or three a week. So if I get four or five, some will wait until the next week, unless it's a question like my grandmother just sent all her life savings to a bad guy, what do I do? You know, but generally speaking, yes, if you are a member of Ask Nick, I will answer your computer questions.
As I am. as I have. So thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Richard. You too. Also, yes. By the way, we have our Sunday night lounge, which is a video chat session that we do every Sunday night. You can go to soundbite/lounge to join. If you are a member of Ask Nick, you can also do it every Wednesday night. I have a session, and that's at asknick.com/members. So if you are a member of Ask Nick, you have three chances a week to get your questions. Four. Nobody expects a Spanish Inquisition chances a week to get your question answered. If you are a Soundbites listener only, you have two.
I guess we should expect the Nick Inquisition on any media we happen to go to.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So the ad business has gotten so bad that Google has worked out a new way to serve ads in your web browser that does not track you, doesn't give any of your personal information to the advertisers. And a conglomeration of advertisers went to the European Union and said, that's going to put us all out of business. And the EU told Google that they couldn't implement it.
Yep.
So the irony is Google is the biggest advertiser on the internet.
Right.
But they tried to make it better for users, and the EU said, no, you're going to put too many people out of business.
And usually the EU is on the consumer side,
yeah.
But not in this. Ads are a feature of life, and I'm sorry, but they are. And I wish it were otherwise, but, you know, ads are, like we said earlier in the show, people have tried all kinds of ways to make money on the internet, and the one that works consistently is advertising. If you want to make money, you take ads. Now, I will admit, I would absolutely take a sponsor for the Ask Nick newsletter. Absolutely, I would. But I wouldn't make it obtrusive, right? And I certainly wouldn't make it, you can't see the answer until you click on the ad. I would never do that. There's ads and then there's ads. There are a lot of places you can go on the internet where all you see are ads and the content is in a tiny little window in the middle of a bunch of ads. And a lot of places have interstitial ads where you're scrolling through something and you have to pass three or four ads to get the end of a fairly short article. But it's how they make money. You know, they make money in two ways. One is simply impressions. That is to say, who actually saw the ad? How many people saw the ad? And if an ad is interstitial, if it's in the middle of what you're reading, you have to scroll past it to go back to reading, so you've seen the ad for certain select values of seen. Then there are the clicked on the ad, which gives you more money.
And then
the next level is sponsored content, and then the next level above that is for example, like on pCloud, if you buy pCloud through my link, I'm an affiliate. That's the word I was looking for. Affiliate links, I get a few bucks if you buy pCloud through my link.
A few bucks? Isn't it a few cents?
Well, yeah. I was being polite.
Well, and so people have talked about that with music streaming on, was it somebody said, I got the check from Spotify for 1 million streams and it was $13.48.
Yep.
And it's just ridiculous that even the artists don't make any money.
No.
So that's why so many artists are forming their own labels, so the label can't keep all the money.
Yeah, so basically, many artists only make money on merch when they do a show.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to a live show,
the venue makes the money on the ticket sales.
Yep. If you're going to a live show, buy the merch. If you want to support the band, buy the merch. And that's why a lot of them have their own record labels, so that when you buy an album, they get the money, as opposed to the record label. And that's true also of streaming. The majority of the money that comes off of streaming goes to the record label, not to the artist. So, yeah, if you're if you're a fan of a certain artist, buy their merch. And support independent artists. Look, there are venues around town that play live music. Go to them. Most of that money does go to the artist.
Yeah. And you may be seeing the next Pearl Jam or the next Rolling Stones.
Right. Or the next Spyro Gyra.
Yeah.
To do, you know, local bands.
Or the
next Teddy Geiger.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, go to these local venues, see the local artists, get exposed to music you wouldn't normally listen to. I guarantee every once in a while you'll find a real gem. There are some truly exceptional artists here in town. This is a music city. And supporting them, it goes a long way toward finding that next generation of artists that you will care about. And you get the bragging rights of saying you saw them when. So hit your local venues.
Yeah, surely.
Including the ones sponsored by Jazz 90.1. Yes. Check the website.
Yeah. Shirley dragged me to a country music concert, you know, a decade ago. I pretty much like all forms of music. Some I like better than others. And there were these young kids up on stage, Brad Paisley and Toby Keith. And
people you've never heard
never heard of before. And they got like a 5-minute set. And then, you know, 10 years later, they're megastars.
Yep. Yep. It's the way it works. You know, somebody's going to see them first. Could be you. And with the number of people, you know, we forget. A prophet is never recognized in their home country. We forget the Eastman School of Music is here.
Yes.
One of the single most prestigious music schools in the entire world is here in Rochester. So there are a lot of really, really good musicians in this town.
We just went to a screening of Star Trek The Motion Picture at the Dryden Theater. They're having a big special on the music of the movies, and it was a music instructor from Eastman. And I hadn't realized it before, but Alexander Courage, who wrote probably the most famous theme song in history, graduated from Eastman School of Music.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
So many people either went to or graduated from the Eastman School of Music that went on to form amazing musical careers.
Jack Alaco's in town today presenting a piece he wrote at Nazareth University. He's an Emmy Award-winning composer. He composed the theme song for The Bold and the Beautiful and The Brave and the Bold, or whatever that's called. I'm not a soap opera guy, but Jack's a friend of mine, and so I'm going to go see his concert after this. But he's from Rochester, and he's an Emmy Award-winning composer. Check him out on IMDb, Jack Alaco. He is a good human being, on top of being a good composer. He's a good human being. So, follow the music in Rochester. There's a lot of it, and boy, is it good. So be aware of that and get out when you can.
It's the Eastman Sisters in Jazz Day at the Eastman School of Music today.
Yep. So a lot of venues to see, a lot of good stuff going on in this town quite regularly. Get out and enjoy it. If you're gonna go out and have an adult beverage with friends, pick a venue that has some good music.
It's Jazz Night at the Rochester Academy of Medicine.
Wow.
With Jessica Ann Best and Alan Jones.
Wow. There's a lot of it.
Yeah, I just went to Music Calendar Rochester, and I didn't know any of these things are happening today.
See that? Every weekend.
Yeah.
There's good stuff every weekend, so if you're...
Tomorrow, going for Baroque.
Excellent.
At the Eastman School of Music.
I'm all for that. All right. That music tells us, excuse me, that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who listened. I particularly want to thank Michael Oden, who came in to do yeoman service here on the board. He's a professional and makes us sound good whether we want to or not. I want to thank Steve Ray.
Aren't the yeomans the ones who die first?
Yes. But they are the ones who work the hardest.
With the red shirts, yep.
I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank all of you who listened in, particularly who kept listening in after I screwed up so badly all day, all day long. But we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?